wherever you listen throughout the world. It's football time.
Welcome back to the Gridiron Guys. It's Zach and Cam joining you this week. And this week today, we have a special guest, Aaron Trussler, the punter from the Richmond Spiders. Welcome to the show, mate. How's things going?
Good. Thanks for having me, guys. Really excited to have a chat.
I guess before we get stuck in your time at Richmond, obviously we know you're there and you started there. Take us back to a young Aaron. We've noticed you're a pretty handy footballer coming through Sandy Dragon system and spending a bit of time with the Bulldogs VFL. Like sort of what was it like growing up for you?
Yeah, Aussie rules, that was my first love. Probably still is at the moment. Like, I love that game so much. I think I was part of that group of kids that grew up and was just obsessed with it, just wanted to play Aussie rules, and I didn't really have any sort of goals outside of that until, you know, maybe 19 or 20 or whatever it was. Yeah, probably 19. So, yeah, my grandpa played for the Western Bulldogs actually during 53, 54 and 55. So our whole household were mad Bulldog supporters. And my dad used to joke and say that you could barrack for another team, you just couldn't live in the house. So, yeah, we were pretty fanatic in the Trussler household. But, yeah, it was awesome. Just I was obsessed with it. My old man is as well, and my whole family, not so much as I was. But, yeah, it's definitely something that I was obsessed with growing up.
Yeah, it sounds like you're a good man then. I'm a Bulldogs fan, so I think we'll get along all right.
Good.
Yeah, it's tough. I swear to God, I hate hanging around with Cam sometimes, especially like Sydney, man. I've lost a few grand finals to you boys. It just, and he never lets it up too either. It's the absolute worst. Like
2016 was a great day, wasn't it?
That was a shocker.
I was there in the nosebleed, just paid a lot of money to be there sitting by myself, but it was so worth it.
Yeah, I was there as well. Because obviously, like, there's not a whole lot of Doggies fans, but nah. So a lot of my friends or parents' friends that like had AFL member tickets or whatever, like sort of not gave them to us, but was looking out for us. So we sort of got tickets dispersed all over that grand final day, which was really sick. So yeah, we got the whole crew and a few cousins, and my grandfather was obviously there at the time as well. So yeah, it was a great day.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Speaking of your grandfather, I suppose, did that mean he played in the grand final back in the 50s?
So there was a story that sort of came out in 2016. So he was on the roster. He was in and out of the team, but like had a really good patch like right before the grand final. But his brother was getting married on grand final day, and he was the best man. So of that, so he wasn't up for selection. I think, I don't know if he would have played. I think it was like very, very, very close. Like he played a lot of games during that year, and I guess we'll never know. But the story came out in like 2016. He did a few articles and interviews, and a lady, I think it was actually a Port Adelaide fan, if my memory is correct, and bought him like a front row seat to that 2016 grand final. So,
wow.
Yeah, so it was a very funny story. And it was pretty funny that it came out so many years after the first grand final. But yeah, I guess for that week, he was a mini celebrity, which was really nice.
Yeah, it's very cool.
I mean, you did speak about your grandfather and, you know, you guys, big Footscray, Western Bulldogs fans and things like that. Was he, like, growing up, was he sort of a big inspiration, you know, a bit of a driving force for you to, like, you know, play Aussie rules and try and make it to that next level?
100%. It was the reason I, like, went to Footscray. So I grew up in McKinnon, which is, like, you know, Sandringham area, Bayside area. And I played football at VFL Footscray, which is the other side of the city. And, like, that was the only... There was the only reason to travel 45 minutes across the West Gate and get over there was only because of that emotional attachment. And then, you know, just seeing another A, his name is Alan, but like, you know, we have the same A Trussler, seeing that in a Footscray red, white and blue, like that just meant the world to me. So it just added a bit of extra motivation for myself. And even like, you know, old man and my family were always very, very emotional when that sort of happened. But yeah, for me, for sure, that was like the driving force for driving 45 minutes across the other side when I could have gone to the Zebras, which was 10 minutes around the corner.
Yeah, it's true. I guess, as you said, the emotional attachment's huge, and it's just something, I guess, it'll stick with your family forever. You mentioned Sandringham, and we've seen the team that you played with was absolutely stacked. Or the King brothers, Brayshaws, Will Walker, Charlie Constable. What was it like playing with those guys?
Yeah, it was, I don't think you realize how amazing a program like that is until you're like till you're out of it. Like, I guess you sort of take it for granted. When I was 17, you know, I didn't really see much of it. You know, I think you all think everyone's on a very similar playing field, and you're like, oh, these are just, you know, guys I play footy with. And then you fast track 5 years later, and you see, I think Andy Brayshaw was a vice captain right now, and Andy McGrath's a year older than me, but you know, he's a vice captain as well now. And then who else was below? Like Bailey Smith at the Dogs.
Wow.
You just see all these names pop up, and it kind of feels really surreal that you can put a name to a face and actually know where that person came from. Obviously, it's sort of, you drift apart a little bit, and I don't really have much contact with a lot of those guys anymore. But yeah, I think being out of it, you appreciate it a lot more than when you're in it. I think when you're in it, you're sort of all caught up in yourself and maybe trying to get drafted and school, because it's, you know, it's year 12, it's a very busy year that way. So you don't really think about it till afterwards. And now I look back and I go, no way these guys are, you know, household names. Like, I grew up with these kids. Jack Higgins is another one. He's actually the one I grew up with. And just seeing his name pop up, he was always going to make it, though. I grew up with him, and he was a fanatic football kid as well. So that didn't surprise me as much. But, like, yeah, it is pretty surreal that you can put some names to faces. And, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, looking at, you know, your time at Sandy and the Bulldogs, you're obviously quite a good footy player. What, you know, what sort of made you look towards punting as a sporting career? Like, where was the change to AFL?
Well, I had a plethora of calves problems from, I guess, 17, 18, 19, 20. And it started off, I had surgery on compartment syndrome. I'm really shortening the story, by the way, but compartment syndrome, then I had popliteal artery. You can ask more questions if you want, but I won't bore you guys out with the intricate details. But yeah, and then I had another surgery on popliteal artery entrapment syndrome. Long story short, the artery that goes from your hamstring to your calf was getting pinched.
Yep.
So I was getting blood flow, and combining with that with the compartment syndrome too, my fascia wasn't opening up. So there's fascia around the tissue. So I guess it looked like I was super unfit, and I probably was as well, but I was just in agony from those two things hindering me. And I remember in, I think it was 2019, you know, I was, as at Footscray, I was sort of feeling good, and then it just kept getting worse. And yeah, the doctor, the vascular surgeon, sorry, at the time was like, look, I thought he was joking when he said this, but he goes, oh, you should think about not playing football. And I went, good one. Like, that's not even in my brain at all. But I think I started to take it pretty seriously, because I was in pain for so long that I was like, all right, maybe I'll try something new. And the pro kick thing and football, American football, I probably came, you know, a little bit after that, where I really, really believed it, if that makes sense. But yeah, that was sort of the transition there, where I went from, you know, oh, I'm hurt to, this, maybe I have a second chance in another sport where it's a little bit less physically taxing on my body.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, I mean, it's super interesting, and we wouldn't know that. It's not just the injury for you. In terms of the mental impact, obviously he said you might not play again, and then trying to get through that and then going to pro kick. In terms of like the mental side of it, how did you find that?
I would say that to anyone. That is by far the hardest part of any of this. The physical stuff you learn to live with, but when you have a sport, or just movement in general, is such an important part for so many people, exercise in general. So, and that was the first time that I'd really stepped away. Like, all the injuries you have, you're still sort of moving and doing a little bit to get that, I guess, that dopamine hit. But
yeah,
that was the first time where I was like, it really stripped away. And it showed, you ask a lot of my friends in 2019 and 2020, the kind of person I was all over the shop. I had no clue what was up, down, left or right. I was overreacting to so many different things. I definitely didn't deal with it probably the way that I'm most proud of, but sure. You know, I still think it's all part of the journey. I had to get surgery again here.
Yeah.
And if I had the same mindset when I was 19, I would have probably flown home. I would have been that sad and upset, but I think it builds resilience over time. And I'm really thankful that I did have that, I guess, had heartbreak, because I feel like it's made me a lot more resilient and realistic, and understanding that yes, football is so important, but there's so much more to life than just obsessing yourself with sport, which is what I did for so many years.
Yeah, I guess I mentioned that because speaking, like, I'm not going to get into it, but yeah, I've had some injuries myself. And in terms of what people don't understand is that mental side of it. I think everyone sees the injury and go, oh, that's a long-term injury. They'll be back in 9 months. They're perfect. They'll be sweet then. But there's so much going on behind the scenes. You're feeling by yourself, all that sort of thing in your own head. But it sounds like you've done an amazing job to get back. And then obviously ProKick, I'm assuming, came in next. Is that right?
Yeah. I put all my eggs in the ProKick basket after that. Yeah, I guess it was sort of a catalyst with COVID as well, just sort of not really having much idea and then having everything stripped back. I sort of, it was almost a blessing in disguise because it made me just focus on just like two or three things and ProKick being one of them. So, yeah, I ended up going crazy with that. I sort of re-fell in love with exercise again, which was really nice because obviously you've interviewed a few boys now, like the transition is quite, it's not difficult's not the right word I'm saying, but like it's very systematic. So you can really see yourself going from an Aussie rules player to a punter. You're like, you can really map it out and say, these are the steps it takes. So it sort of gave me a bit of belief and I thought, okay, maybe I can do this and maybe I can have a second chance at sport. And well, a couple of years later, look at that. So I'm pretty happy how it's all gone.
Yeah. And I mean, looking at your ProKick time when you were there, did you have to change much of your kicking style when you first started? You know, was it a simple transition process for you, or did you find any sort of bits in particular that really sort of struggled with?
I think I didn't find it crazy difficult. I was a decent kick with pretty good control, but I'm not a big kid. So I think the hardest part for me was the strength and utilizing every muscle to kick. Like when you grow up, you don't realize how many bad habits you just ingrain in your kicking. So the hardest part was retraining some of those. I was lucky enough that playing a lot of high-ish level footy, you know, I had a decent kick anyway, but a movement that I never sort of mastered until, like, I guess later in my pro kick was actually using your glutes to get through the ball. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to illustrate it, but like you sort of have to like get your ass back and then it's sort of, I don't know. It's, you'll see it in the best punters. One of my good mates, Brett Thorson, is at Georgia and he's one of the best at it. And that's why he's at Georgia. So you just look at it and you're like, there's all the power. And it's something that I guess I didn't see until I got to ProKick. But then once you have those little bits of knowledge, it's kind of like everything clicks. So you sort of like struggle. And then you have like that little moment of movement that changes. And then it sort of becomes a very quick improvement.
Yeah, right. So is there sort of habits that you try and break out? I guess we see like punters taking it in the pocket and punting, or there's guys that sort of roll out a little bit. Do you find you sort of try and roll, like initially with footy brain, like you sort of roll out, play on a little bit, or is it sort of having to try and learn those like muscle memory of just taking it in the pocket and going?
No, so I roll out. So my whole game is very Aussie rules based anyway. Cool. So I haven't kicked a single spiral here. That's just the way that our coaching system like has been based around. And I like it. You know, it's plays to my strength. But I still want to achieve the same like leg swing and pattern as traditional kicking, because with traditional kicking, you're kicking your leg straight with a ball that way, you know? So if you miss slightly, it could go anywhere. So you have to sort of be that precise with a spiral. And then if you can just translate that to Aussie rules kicking, which is something that we've done for so many years, you should be able to be very consistent. So for me, even though that I'd still do the same rollout Aussie rules look, there's so much of ProKick's kicking style that I still want to achieve. Like I don't want to land on my right foot. I don't want to hop through the ball. I still want to finish like my left leg on the ground and my right leg up high to kick through the ball. So yeah, it's sort of about bridging the two actually.
Yeah. And I mean, so obviously like ProKick is instilling you guys with really good stuff. And you mentioned you were there during COVID. How was it during sort of the COVID year, you know, working time with the coaches, but obviously as well, like the other guys in the program, how'd you find all that?
For me, it was actually a blessing. I think it was a real blessing. It gave me sort of purpose in that time because, well, you couldn't do a whole lot, but you could still do something on your own. And punting is a sport that you can do on your own, which is good. Kick the ball yourself, go run down and get it. Just keep doing that. So for me, it gave me a lot of purpose during that time. I think a lot of people sort of, you know, didn't really know what was going on, but I was lucky enough to actually have something to focus on. And because it sort of stripped back my life and made it very simple, maybe the process of being a better punter was increased a lot more because of the fact that I was just focusing on that, you know, day in, day out. There was not much else to think about.
Yeah, I guess that's the best thing. I remember we talked to Chappie about this, and he just said, yeah, he found it really bizarre. And like, you'd obviously have like police or someone watching you for like you're timing you while you're down the oval. So
yeah.
I guess he probably contended with a bit of that. I guess we mentioned earlier at the start, we know that you're a punter for Richmond Spiders, and going through the program, what offers came your way, or how did that sort of process land for you?
Yeah. So I was part of the process of, I guess, so Johnny's the other guy that runs at ProKick, yep. and he's very much the guy that sort of speaks to a lot of the coaches. And he sort of has two ways of going about it. He either says, here's five guys, and choose this one of the five guys. Or he goes, he'll not bottle you in, but go, this is the type of prototype that would fit this conference and that conference or whatever. And so Johnny just sort of mentioned a few schools to me. I don't really have a lot of the details to a lot of that. Bishop, he sort of did a lot of those chats. But there was Bucknell, Wofford, Ohio was another school in that like crux of, I guess, when I was starting to get good. But yeah, I remember one day Richmond came along. Johnny just said, it was really quick, actually. He said, search up Richmond. Like didn't really say a whole lot. Searched up, beautiful school, yada, yada, yada. And then within like the week, I was speaking to the head coach. And I guess I was part of that, the kids where this is exactly what they wanted, an Aussie rules punter that could do this. And so, yeah, that was my process. It seems very simple, but I guess I'm going to have to speak to Johnny in terms of how difficult it actually was. We just kick. We're like the I don't know. He ships us all off. We do all that. Like, we just kick.
He does just takes care of the business side of everything.
Yeah, he does all that. So if you wanted to know which schools in the conversation that he had, yeah, that'd be a question for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, looking at, how'd you find your initial move over there? Was there many culture shocks, and did you find it sort of easy to settle into life both on and off the field?
It was so hard. Like, I wasn't homesick. I don't know how to describe it. It's not homesick, because I get homesick now and I know that's a different feeling, but yeah. I think it's just the fact that Aussie to Aussie, we know what we're talking about.
Mm.
But we're very sarcastic. But here, they don't know some of the sayings we have or the meaning behind what we're saying. And I've probably pissed off a lot of people trying to be sarcastic and a smart ass. And they think that I'm serious, but I'm not. So I think it took probably 6 months, not for me to get used to them, but for them to sort of get used to me, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it does, for sure. I was going to say, it's one, like, it sticks out for me is, like, they say thank you, say no worries, and they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I don't understand it.
Yeah, I think just the smart ass thing. I think I've got myself in trouble a few times by being a smart ass in a situation where I would have been okay back home and then not here. Like, you just have to be a little bit more careful. So yeah, it probably took me a better part of 6 months for people to sort of understand who I was. Cause I sort of came in, it was football season, so there's not a whole lot of social outings. It probably took to the spring where everything was a little bit more relaxed and you could actually hang out with people a little bit more, for me to feel comfortable here and for them to sort of feel comfortable with me. Cause I think you don't sort of realize how big of a culture difference it is. I think we're so used to seeing American media that we think it's very relatable and whatnot, but it's not. But we're really lucky with the ProKick is that we have a lot of guys in different situations as well. So I think when the 6 month period was when a lot of my friends from when I was training with came here, like, there's Sam Vanderhaar, Brett Dawson, Hugo Nash was here for a bit, and then Harry Tron's another friend that was here. He came a little bit later, but when they all came, it was now I had like a hub of people to sort of talk to, and then I would feel less crazy. I honestly felt like a little crazy at the start. I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, why am I pissing people off? Like, why is this happening? But then you sort of have chats with them and you realize, oh my God, like that's really normal, and it's nothing personal and yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, that's definitely I always say this, the punting's the easiest part. It's actually just fitting in and understanding. Because at the end of the day, like, you can't really come in swinging. You're in another country. You're the sort of the guest here. You got to fit into what they're used to. You can't just come in swinging and be, you know, completely Aussie straight away. You sort of have to build up to that until people sort of trust you and understand where it's coming on. I'm probably – I still piss off people, probably being sarcastic and trying to take the piss, but – I think more people know where it comes from now. So, yeah, it's much easier.
Oh, for sure. Is it a bit of a novelty for your teammates, like having you and they get you to say like certain things, or is it sort of everyone's used to it now?
No, I think I think I always think that I'm like they're used to it, and then I'll say something, and then they'll be like, "What?" So, like even today, then I was I was at the dining hall, and I said it was like a joke with one of my friends. Like I was like, "Oh, he was eating really healthy," and I just said something like, "Oh, you got the breakup body going on because he just got broken up." and it, so he didn't know what I meant by that. I was like, "It's nothing personal. Like I'm saying, like you're trying to be like the best version of yourself now." So like little things like that literally happened today. So I'm sure there's many scenarios where like I say something and they're like, "What are you saying, mate?" Like, but yeah, I'm sure it'll keep happening. I just got to get used to it. But I'm lucky now that people like, you know, you do make friends after what's been a year, over a year and a half now, that I do have a good group around me that know what I'm about. And it helps as well if there's a few internationals at each schools. I sort of know a few more of them now, and it's a lot easier because we have the same, maybe not the same situation, but a similar part of them that Americans just not used to. And that's
a bit of common ground, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose looking from off the field to on the field, you know, your first game, looking at that, it was a game against Howard. You guys got a win 38-14, but how did you find the experience yourself? You know, any nerves sort of coming into it for that first game?
No nerves. I felt really good being out there. I was actually super emotional, to be honest. I'm a very emotional person. So that probably, like, for my friends, if they hear this, probably not surprised by that. But I remember after the first kick, I was like, "Oh, you did it. Like that's been on your mind for so long. You just kicked a football at a Division I school." And that was really cool. But it was weird, though. I feel like growing up, every big milestone you have your family or you have a friend or you have someone there. Mm. When I came off the field, I just got there. So I didn't know a lot of parents like that. So I came off and like just went to the locker room. So that was probably the weirdest part, was actually like one of the biggest moments of my life, or just like a very important part of what I've been trying to achieve for so long. And then going off and FaceTiming people about it instead of like giving someone a hug. And being like, "Wow, that was cool." So that, I think that was probably the hardest part. So, but it was incredible. It was a great stepping stone for what ended up being a pretty good season. And then obviously the next season being even better. So yeah, it was really cool. I wasn't really nervous. I was just sort of, emotional in the moment. And just being like, "Wow, this is really cool."
Yeah, I guess speaking on that, and you say obviously you had a lot of time by yourself, and obviously you weren't able to celebrate with you. Have you been able to have your parents or your family or friends come to your games and obviously have that special moment with them when they've come and watched?
Yeah, so this season in particular, because I guess in 2021, Australia was still very heavy, the lockdowns and vaccines were very slow, so not that year. But then obviously, like, I got close with a lot of families, which helped a lot, you know, so I could go with the families and talk to them, and that really did help massively. We got I've got so much love for the parents at Richmond. They are incredible people. They treated my family like kings and queens for the time that they were here, and yeah, so that 100% helped. But obviously, early days, I didn't have those connections until a little later. So that's they're fantastic. But yeah, I was super lucky. My family was here for four of the games at the end of last year. So they came for the final two regular season games, and then just as we played well, we were in the playoffs as well. So they got to see two playoff games. That was incredible. I cried. I'm like, wow, I'm really portraying myself as an emotional man, but that's the truth. But
that's okay. That's completely fine.
Love it.
I was in tears after the Delaware game. It was a really good game as well. We won of a field goal with about 2 seconds left. So that, I think I was probably more emotional about the whole thing. Like, oh my goodness, my family was here for that game. Like, that's wild. So they've been here. And then one of my best mates, Lucas, and I've got two friends who live in New Yorkish, New Jersey, New York area. And they came down for the UVA game. So that was the first game that I had someone from back home at the game. And that was just so cool. Like, I was warming up and like every 10 seconds I was looking over to the, like, our parents' side. And when I saw them, and like, I had a massive smile, but it makes it all worth it. Like, it's obviously tough if you don't get 10 games where you don't have anyone, you just have like the families here, which is still obviously incredible, but just to share that one or two or three games or whatever it is with family or friends here, it's so worth it, because it's just something that you cannot replicate back home. So to get someone to be there for a little bit, it's really special.
Yeah. And I suppose looking at, you know, that first season as a whole, you know, you guys, you mentioned it was a good year, finished up 5-5. But it sort of looked like your results were all grouped together, like your losses sort of came mid-season in a row, and then you had the wins at the beginning and the ends. How was the sort of feeling amongst the group about that year going through those sort of stretches?
Oh, it was tough. It's hard to comment. It's really hard to comment for me or just any special teams player in their first season about all that sort of stuff because it's so new. Everything's so new. So I don't know how to read the vibe, if that makes any sense. Like it's so cutthroat in college football. You win, like if you lose like two or three games, like your season's over. Not quite literally, but
pretty close to
literally, like your season's over, which is crazy because if you come from Aussie Rules background where you can lose 10 games and still make the top eight and, you know, maybe make push in the playoffs. But it was obviously weird because we got two wins and then five losses. And then it's like, what do you do from there? You just got to fight. But it provided a stepping stone for our following year. So obviously last year we did a lot better and you've just got to keep building. So I guess if we didn't win those four games, maybe we don't get the recruits and we don't get excitement and we don't get the belief. So as much as the season is over, there's always something to play for. So yeah, I guess finishing good was really positive for the following year that came after that.
You guys, Zach.
Well, I mean, looking at yourself as well, that first season, what were your thoughts on your season? Like the punting side of it, you know, how did you find that after a full year, you know, playing Division I football?
I think I look back at it and I realise how average it was. It was a very average season. Like, and not like statistically, it was okay. It was nothing like crazy wrong. It was like average 40, which is very mid-pack, no dramas. But some of my calf problems came back up again and I had to have surgery a bit later. So I don't want to blame that, but that was a part of it. But I think for me, like, I just didn't understand certain situations the way that I should have, if that makes any sense. Like, I think that you come here and you might be a little naive and think I just got to kick the ball. No, there's actually a lot of different factors in different parts of the game. You know, there's times where, you might have to just kick a line drive and try and get field position. There's times where we just need a fair catch right now. And it might be a quick one-step kick that doesn't go that far. But if they're sending the whole team into the box to try and block it, like you just got to get it off and make sure it's fair caught. So I think early days I'd realize like that I was not executing the wrong kicks. I was doing okay, but not realizing what kick was in which scenario, which led me to either be rushed in situations that I shouldn't have been rushed or like too lackadaisical when I should have got it off quick. And then everything falls apart. Like you might land on your right foot and you kick it bad and you do all that. And so I would say that that part was extremely average. And so I think the difference with this year is understanding the game a little bit better. So, I didn't really have a spring to like work on my strengths. So I didn't really improve physically, but I feel like I just learned the game a little bit better.
Yeah, it's huge. And I guess what we've learned from talking to you guys and like Chappie is anyone looking from the outside in, Aussie fans, even American fans, I guess they like nuances in punting. They just see it as just kicking the ball, getting it down the other end. They look at the return. I guess most people don't look at the punt. They see it that way. So I guess for you, in hindsight, looking at the first season comparing to this season, you can see all those little changes that you need to make, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think you've just got to watch the game. My biggest problem my first season was I was so worried about my punting that I would like kick the ball into the net or like work on my drop, and I'm not actually looking at the game and feeling like the vibe because you can get a sense. Like for example, if like the defense, the other team's defense are like just tired, they're struggling, and it's like fourth and four, right? And if I miss, like sometimes the defense will stay out there, or another team will come out and they'll swap.
Yep.
Like if you're watching and reading that game, you'll go, okay, I know the intensity that the other team may or may not give me, but I've got a 90%. Idea of what they're going to give me, which means that I know now, okay, defense is out there, take it easy, all right, catch the ball, take your steps, kick through it properly. Or if it's fourth and six and it's like they need to come, like they're going to come hard, it's a close game or they're behind or whatnot, like get it off quick. So actually watching the game and seeing what's going on is very important because you sort of like get an understanding of the other team's vibe. Like I actually struggled the most in games where we were up by a lot because they're sort of just throwing the kitchen sink. All right, we're up by a lot. Like, we may as well just try and get a block on special teams. But if it's a close game where it's like, okay, deep breath, everybody relax. Let's just get this punt off. Let's get a fair catch and let's start again. So you've just got to be able to understand those are the dynamics at play. And then it makes it a lot easier because you're not even thinking about the kick at that point. You just know, okay, this is what I have to do. I'm pretty sure this is what's going to happen. And 9 times out of 10, you're going to be correct if you watch the film and understand the game.
Yeah. So I suppose, like, you sort of mentioned, like, learning the game and things like that. And then turning towards your season just past, you guys end up going sort of like 8-3 in the regular season. As you sort of mentioned, was that, you know, all built in sort of the preseason? And did you guys expect that sort of turnaround, or was everyone in the building quite aware, you know, that you could probably have a good year going?
No, we definitely had belief. We got some pretty good recruits. And I think with our season last year, we had our quarterback was out for 4 weeks of pretty much that whole losing streak. He was out. So we thought that if we could like patch it all together, we'd have a really good season. We're still pretty disappointed. Like we believe that we could have beat Sacramento State and kept going, but we believe that we could have beat William and Mary and potentially, you know, won the conference, but alas, that doesn't happen. So I think we did have the belief that we could do that. And it was really nice to get more wins and losses and make playoffs. Like, that was pretty special, but I don't know. There's so many different factors. It's not something that you can pinpoint and say that this is a good preseason or watching film. It's accumulation of everything because at the end, like, it's so hard to grasp if you're an Aussie Rules fan, because if you can have 30 touches and make 15 mistakes and probably and potentially still get best on, you can really, you can't make mistakes. So, you know, one bad throw turns into a pick six, or a fumble turns into a fumble recovery. So, you know, half the time it's not execution, but it's just sort of, there's just so many factors at play. You can't like pin down to it. And obviously I don't really know a lot of the intricate details of the offense or the defense to sort of comment on how their preparation was different. But I think definitely for our special teams, probably more for me, just because I was understanding the game, was just sort of realizing, like, sort of don't be a hero and watch the game and do your job, which probably filters to the other rest of the team as well. Instead of, if you're not trying to be a hero and just do your job, then it works as a nice machine.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. And you mentioned you guys qualified for the postseason, and you said got knocked out by Sacramento State in that second round. What was that experience like between regular season and finals football? And I mean, for you guys looking forward, does that obviously give you a stepping stone and light the fire for the boys going forward?
Yeah, for sure. I think the FCS, it's really strange because we don't have the noise that the FBS have. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a feel externally that it was a different game. I think you have to create that all yourself. We don't get the crowds of 80, 90,000 that those big Power 5 conferences get. Like, a lot of the energy that's created is within us. Yeah. So personally, it didn't feel too different because we're generating it every game anyway. We're trying to make sure that our method last year was 1-0, and every game is the most important game that we'll ever play. So for us, you know, the noise was no different to what it usually would be. We still had the same crowds, and well, the Sacramento State was raining like crazy, so we didn't really get a crazy crowd. But yeah, a lot of it is generated within us. So I wouldn't say that the intensity was any different. Like, you just got to treat every game the exact same. I'm sure it's different if you interview some of the boys who are in the FBS that have that noise, and it's tense and it's all external and you just feed off it. Yeah. I've no doubt that those boys will comment and say something completely different to us FCS lads. But yeah, for me, it wasn't a whole lot different.
Any games, you know, during that season that stood out to you? I mean, you mentioned that one at University of Virginia away. I mean, you know, was that quite enjoyable getting into an atmosphere like that?
Yeah, that was really cool. That was really sick just to have, like, look around and see a sea of orange. Like, even though they weren't really, you know, it's not a sea of blue and red or anything like that. It was just really cool to look around and have people everywhere. And like, the energy was just really cool. But it's a weird feeling because, like, you notice it if you're not playing, but once you're like on the field, it's just it's the same thing, if that makes any sense. Like, you're still catching a ball, you're still kicking it. So I didn't feel it any different. Like, when I was on the field, it'd be more like running out and then like they score a touchdown and hearing big noise, or like just looking around after the game and being like, wow, these seats go on forever. Like, I don't know. It was definitely crazy, but it was crazy when you stopped and thought about it. In the game, it was very much, it's just catching and kicking a ball.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose that's the experience. Like, it's, you as soon as you're focused in, I suppose you lose the sight of the stadium. So that, I mean, in terms of year, you get to play in some pretty sweet stadiums, but it doesn't change the aspect of the game. Cause I know looking forward, you've got Michigan State this year. So that's another one to put onto the one that you're going to play at.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. We had Virginia Tech in our first year too, and that was wild.
Did they have that entrance?
Yeah, they had Enter Sandman. We only got the end of it. We didn't really see the whole thing, but yeah, we got the back half or back fourth of, I guess, of that big entrance. But yeah, I'm super excited for that. But it's a long way away as well. I don't want to think about it just yet. I've got, you know, we got to get through spring ball and get through summer and just enjoy yourself before it gets there. We'll worry about that when the time comes. But yeah, it is definitely something to look forward to. It's something to hang your hat over and be like, wow, we get to play, you know, Michigan State. That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, capping off that year, you had a big year. You mentioned you go and get named as semifinals for the FCS Punter of the Year because you led the CAA in net punting and you helped your team rank fourth in the CAA for punt defense. I mean, that must have been really special to get that. I know it's a team game and you mentioned that, but it's probably always nice to get a little bit of acknowledgement for your work.
Yeah, that was really nice because my game, I don't kick a long line drive all that often. So statistically, you look at my stats and it's really not that special. I think I averaged 41 and that's once again sits very middle. If you put me in the FBS, it would sit lower half. Put me in the FCS, it's top half, whatever. But I think it was nice because our goal was, you know, as minimal return yards as possible. We wanted 40 to 43 yards, fair catch. And I think I was really happy that we really achieved that. You know, I think we only had 22 return yards for an entire season, which is pretty crazy. But it's something that was game planned, something that I don't know, sometimes I might have fought with my coach a bit because, you know, you don't get the glory. Like, no one cares. Like, if you don't know anything about punting, no one cares about a 42-yard ball. Like, really, no one cares. It's not cool. But they care about the 70-yard ball that looks good on ESPN, but it might get returned 30, 40 yards, but no one sees that. So, yeah, because I didn't get any CAA awards. I didn't really get, like, a Special Teams Player of the Week award. I just sort of flew under the radar. But you sort of know internally that that's your job and you can't worry about that at all. You've just got to do what you need to do to win. So that was really nice because I sort of looked at the rest of the guys that were on that list too, and I guess a lot of them were in a similar situation where they might not necessarily have had the 46 47 yard averages, but they had minimal return yards, a lot of fair catches, not many touchbacks. So they're the different elements of punting, I guess, that if you know the game, yeah, it's awesome. But yeah, if you look on ESPN, like, no one's gonna look at what I did and be like, oh, he's a good punter. Like, so that was kind of nice just to have that and be like, okay, cool. Like, good job.
Yeah, I guess that's frustrating. I suppose the only time ESPN makes highlights of punters is when they make mistakes. I guess that's the hardest thing for you guys.
Yeah.
I think you sort of talked about 2023 season. You're probably not looking as far in the future, but when does preparation start for you guys? And I suppose for yourself, I know you're doing training at the moment, but when does things start to ramp up? And is there anything you've been working on yourself to, like, take your game a little bit further or changes you're making?
Yeah, it's tough pretty much. The minute the season ends, like, it kind of starts again. There's no off-season in American sport. It's a very different mentality to Australian sport. Wow, I just said Australian like an American. That was horrible. So yeah, we came back first day on campus and started our winter workouts, and then we have our agility and mat drills in the last few weeks, and then we have our spring bowl next week. Not next week, sorry, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, sorry, because we have some spring break as well. So yeah, it just sort of progresses like that until the season starts. And for me, I'm just stoked. I'm just so happy to be doing running and lifting. I did the math. I haven't done an uninhibited preseason since like 2016. I've had a surgery or something go on every year, and I haven't done an organized like running session since 2019 at Footscray. So I think I'm just so happy just being able to be physical and run and lift and kick and do all that again. Cause there's times where it sucks because you're up early and your body's tired, but you know, I'm just so thankful to be able to do it again, have like the ability to just be active.
Yeah, and you can look at building that, you know, sort of revenge body, as you said, with your mate there together.
Nah, but yeah, my goals are simple. I don't really like to put it in numerical terms. I like to just sort of be like, just be better every day, be more explosive today, or be more, be stronger. Because then you don't cap yourself. I don't want to say, oh, I don't want my bench to be 255 pounds or whatever it is. Like, you know, I just want to get stronger. So then I don't want to put a cap on what I can do. You know, I don't want to say to you guys like, oh, I want to average 40 something this year. I just want to be the best punter, and the number that eventuates will take care of itself.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to look at it. I guess if, as soon as you put goals in there and you don't meet them, then I guess the expectations are never met. Now, I guess we watch a fair bit of college. We don't watch a huge amount of FCS, and I think we were going to have to now, obviously. We're going to become Richmond fans outside of appreciate the teams we do follow. Is there anyone in your team other than yourself that we need to keep an eye out for? Is there any guys that you think, geez, they could make it to the next level, or they're just outstanding athletes?
Yeah, for sure. Ryan Cole on the offensive line had a really good year last year. He's someone to look forward to. Tristan Wheeler has been one of the best FCS linebackers in the last, like, he's won every award possible in the FCS. So look for him. Marlon Lewis is a D tackle who had a breakout year last year. Those are the three guys off the top of my head that I would look out for. Probably a bias because I'm quite close. I'm good friends with those three guys. So I apologize to any teammates out there that I don't mention. I don't think they're going to be watching this an Australian podcast too closely, but if they are, I apologize in advance.
No, perfect. We do love that. So hopefully, just let them know though. So we're always looking for more listeners. But you know, yourself, what are your sort of long-term goals and aspirations? You know, where would you sort of like to see yourself end up, maybe even post Richmond Spiders career?
Changes. It honestly changes every single day. It's hard. I guess it's hard to put like a goal on myself because what, you know, if I was 17 saying that I was doing this, I would probably be like, why? Like what? So my philosophy now is just taking it day by day, and whatever comes of it will come of it. I'll plan as if I'm, you know, going to play football forever. I'll work out and kick as if I'm going to play football forever, full well knowing that's not the truth. You know, there's going to be a time where that ends, and wherever that ends, it ends. But I don't really know, to be honest, what the next chapter is. I've been someone that predicts my life their whole since growing up, and literally none of it has come true. So I don't want to go through that process again and say, I want to live in this country in that spot and play football and do this and do that and work in this area. Because every prediction that I have made since I was 12 hasn't really come about, but something, you know, more exciting or more eye-opening or more tailored towards maybe who I am has come about. So yeah, I don't want to really put a cap on it. I'm just going to keep playing football as if I'm going to work out and kick as if I'm going to play forever and see where that takes me. I'm very open to whatever opportunity comes, whether that's still in sport, whether that's just working, whether that's in America, whether that's in Australia, whatever that is, I'm open to all of that. I don't want to really put a cap on it right now. I'm just going to take it day by day and see where it takes me.
Yeah, look, I think that's an unbelievable way to look at it. I think, yeah, as you said, if you put things on it, then you might not meet it, or you're just going to live things how you want to live them. I guess I just wanted to quickly ask before we wrap it up. I saw on your Instagram you made it to the college championships and your mate Brett Thorson was playing. It made me a bit upset. I'm a Tennessee fan. So seeing Georgia win was a bit tough to see, but seeing an Aussie get up is awesome. What was that experience like going to the game and then also seeing one of your best mates that you've obviously made friends with through ProKick winning it, and then did you get to celebrate with the boys afterwards?
Yeah, so we were there for the Rose Bowl. I had to be back at school for the national championship, but that was one of the most like pinch yourself surreal moments that I've had in my life. Like, and it's so like we've just spawned in these Americans' lives, like in a way. People would tell me, like, I'll ask me, like, what are you doing for New Year's Eve? And I'd be like, oh, I'm going to the Rose Bowl with three other Aussies, and they're like, what, like how? And I'm like, that's right, this is a really big game. Like, and I guess we sort of took it for granted before, or well, not took it for granted because we knew the gravity of the game, but the fact that we could just roll off the tongue and be like, yeah, I'm going to the Rose Bowl, like it was nothing, was really crazy. And I was with Harry Traum, who's at Indiana State. I was with Hugo Nash, who was at JMU for a bit, and you know, the three of us were sitting there saying we've all trained together at ProKick, and it was just so surreal, you know, thinking about where we came from to watching our mate, you know, win a championship was crazy. That was just that was Rose Bowl. That was like, you know, that was one of the craziest games. Ohio State, Georgia, like kick it literally like the strike of midnight. Everything about it was just so surreal. Just seeing the gravity, like the fans and everything. Like, it's really, really hard to put into words and hard to say what it's like, what comparison it was like back home. Sorry, I think my phone, there we go. It's really hard to say what the comparison was like back home, but it was just, it was really incredible and awesome for us to see with Brett, because he's a very talented man. He's a hardworking, humble kid. And, you know, for someone like the is at Georgia and in the spotlight, who could well and truly just be an asshole. Like, he has every right to just walk around with the biggest head wobble, but he's a really humble guy and really thankful and appreciative that he's at Georgia. You know, a lot of timing's involved with that. You know, there's a lot of great kicks out there, and I think he understands how fortunate that it's all worked out for him, and to see someone like that win such a big championship was awesome for us as well.
Yeah, no, it's unreal. It's definitely like putting the Aussies on the map. You look over now, especially, and pretty much in all the big games, the team's got an Aussie punter now, and it's really cool to see, isn't it?
It was sick, yeah, because that game there was Jesse Murko for Ohio State and then Jordan Sandy at TCU the following week. So it was just Aussies littered everywhere. And there was a period of time where we thought USC might have made it, which would have been – we had Aiden Sleep Dalton, who's another Aussie, which that could have been four Aussies in the college playoffs, which would have been really cool. But nonetheless, it's great that it worked out the way it did.
Yeah, love it. So, but look, thanks for joining us today, Aaron. We might wrap up there. We really enjoyed our chat, and you know, we can't wait to sort of see what you get up to this year.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for letting us in your crib. It's been real.